be advised.
Spoiler alert episode. Spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler ep 87. Bohemian Rhapsody. Chris, are you ready for this?
Galileo, Galileo.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. We have a first-time guest.
Yes.
Yeah. Comedian, never been on the show, also a filmmaker, Grant Lyon. How are you?
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks
Appreciate it.
He's got his voted sticker. Good for you.
Yeah.
Before we get into Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes.
You directed a movie, Killer Kate.
I didn't direct it. I was actually just one of the leads in it.
I don't have any of my information. Right. Before the show, I was like, "You did a doc." He's like, "Nope, scripted movie."
It was the closing film of the Shriekfest Film Festival.
Yes.
Yeah,
and I didn't get a chance to see it, but Neil saw it, so he'll be talking about it on the site. He hasn't finished his article yet.
Oh, okay.
What was it like working on the film?
Oh, it was great, man.
Since you didn't direct it.
Yeah.
You've been lying to me this entire time.
I just got to waltz in and play a funny part and then waltz out of there, you know? No, I mean, it's a horror comedy, and definitely my part is the comedy. So that's fun to, like, be part of. Like, you just get to come in and be like, hey, I know you guys have had a real bummer morning, but now jokes. You know? So I'm like this. I play, like, this neurotic killer that is just really worried the whole time. So that was like a fun...
Like a Woody Allen serial killer.
Yeah, I mean, literally, that is honestly kind of what I was doing. It was like, no, don't break those windows. They're real expensive. They're floor to ceiling, you know? Like, just stuff like that. And it's fun to be part of like a horror film because of all the practical effects and stuff like that. Oh, you know, yeah. I mean, I work on comedy so much, so I don't get to see like, ooh, I got a steak sticking out of my chest. Yeah, that's fun. I get to walk around and see how that gets done.
All this fake blood.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it had a limited theatrical release, and now it's on Amazon Prime and stuff. So, you know, it was fun.
I enjoyed it. It's like multiple serial killers, and then Kate and her friends kind of fight back.
The premise of the film is there is this family who runs a sort of Batesian roadside motel, and nobody's staying at their hotel anymore because of home sharing apps. And so they get the brilliant plan to buy a home and then put it on a home sharing app and then murder people in the house to give the home sharing app a bad name so that people will come back to their... They're real pros, let me tell you. And so the movie follows a bachelorette party that has rented out this home for the weekend and this family of amateur killers that is trying to kill them. Yeah.
That's great.
But then it turns on its head where then these girls really take their power back and maybe start going on the offensive.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Well, that's how you fight killers.
Yeah.
Just become a serial killer yourself.
You want to finish that bachelor party.
Yeah.
You know, when you start, it's a whole weekend. They rented it for the whole weekend.
Yeah.
They're going to get their money's worth.
But I mean, pretty much the whole movie, I'm just like the reluctant person in the family. I'm like, I feel like we should come up with a better plan than this, right? Nobody? I'm the only one? I mean, I'm going to do it because you're doing it, but I mean, I'm not happy about it.
Well, cool. Yeah. Killer Kate on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, thanks.
And Graham, we've got some Patreon sponsors for
this. Let's bang them out. Let's get them going.
Now if we get back right now, Patreon is a little under 1,000. If we get past over 1,000 again, we can do the 2 spoiler reps a month. Right now we're at 1, and this is it, ladies and gentlemen. But sometimes we do 2 anyway. You know, it happens. It depends on the schedule. But
we're doing 2 this month.
Yeah. It's not like a hard and fast
rule. We're doing
Bohemian
Rhapsody and Overkill.
Yeah. So
it's Overlord or whatever.
You know, we just like you guys to get us over 1,000, regardless of what we're doing.
Overlord.
Yes.
And
we're
doing. I
don't
know why I keep calling it Overkill.
And we really appreciate you guys at the $50 ad tier, and we want to plug your wares.
Let's do it.
So Johnny Rulon is promoting his novel Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon, both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and our mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com. That's happyhorrorshowproductions.com. and the Audacity Performing Arts Project. It produces after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools. Performing arts education is not a luxury. Please visit them at audacityperformingarts.com. Audacityperformingarts.com. Is that the sound of a dog drinking?
That's Aaron's dog. Yeah. He's drinking.
Yeah.
Or we have a really loud fountain.
Yeah.
He's real thirsty from all that laying around.
Yeah, I know. It's wearing him out. From Chris Barker Howard, we have Coffee Over Suicide. It's a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday, wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com. That's coffeeoversuicide.com. And Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast, NT with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. The shows were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in April 2018 with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Google Alice Frazier Trilogy for more info. And Rebecca Evans, The Art Podcast. When we move past hesitation and we're true to ourselves, we find our own art in life. If you want to hear some fun stories and get inspired, check out The Art, facebook.com/TheArtPodcasts with an S. And a new Patreon ad tier from Scott Ryan Hart, The Night Watchman. It's a graphic novel that he's doing on Kickstarter. And it's about a story of a hero who clubs down evil with flashlights and shines light into the darkness when that guy is not working his day job at the local Home Depot. It's an illustrated novel that will be contributed to by about 30 artists, ranging from fantasy game illustrators, cartographers, storyboard illustrators, to well-known comic book artists. So check it out. Information, you go to ninthpointstudio.com. That's 9, the number, ninth, ninthpointstudio.com. All right. Thanks, Patronies.
Thank you guys for supporting the show. Go to patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds and we can read your business or story or whatever. So let's get into Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah. Now, one thing I didn't want to say on the regular episode, I want to talk about in the spoiler there. I really felt like there was almost like an error or an editing glitch. And I'll tell you which.
Let me just say this.
Yeah.
Spoiler episode. Mm-hmm. So if you've never listened to one of these before, we're going to talk about everything in the movie, the ending, key elements. Right. We're going to reveal it all. So if you have not watched this movie and don't want it spoiled, pause. Go watch the movie.
Yes.
Come back.
Mm, or if you have no intention of ever seeing the film.
That's which is many of you. Yeah. If we know that many of you, you use these spoilers to go, like, oh.
Now I don't have to go to the movie.
I don't have to watch that dumb movie.
Yeah. So the movie... and justifiably so, and it should have done this, it explores Freddie Mercury's sexuality at the beginning, where he's struggling with it. He has a girlfriend at the beginning. He gets married. Yeah, and, you know, he doesn't come out as being gay.
They actually just get engaged. They do not get married.
They just get engaged. Yeah. So they don't quite get to the marriage. But he doesn't come out as being gay, and which I find interesting. The only one who really knows he's gay is his wardrobe. Because he's dressing fairly flamboyantly before he comes out as gay. And
she works in a woman's clothing store, and he shops there, and that's how they fall in love.
There's no hint there. So what I found really just inconsistent was that, first of all, he's naming the band Queen. Okay, and you haven't come out yet? No? This is just
a coincidence? Well, that was interesting because they named the Queen because they're from the UK, right?
Okay.
I'll buy that.
And Freddie Mercury said, like, he liked that it was Queen was just whatever you wanted it to be.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, it could be about sexuality. It could be about the actual Queen of England. Mm-hmm. It could be about so much different stuff.
Now, the scene I'm talking about was a random scene in the studio or when they were in that farmhouse that was, quote, the makeshift studio. And one of the other band members was getting mad and it was about to throw something. And he goes, oh, there's only room for one hysterical queen in this band. And I realized, but he hasn't come out yet. He's still with a girl. Like, he hasn't actually, you know, come out as gay. And so I'm like, all right, well, if he made that comment, does that mean that is him coming out? Like, what? How is this match with the rest of the film?
Well, I think at that point, they've already been watching him hook up with dudes on the road. They're not dumb.
Well, I thought this was kind of before.
I knew Todd Glass was gay well before he
came out. But, like... the film made such an effort to really show that, like, he doesn't know he's gay yet. He's with this girl, and, like, he hasn't really explored that side of himself yet. And then they put this kind of just, like, scene in the middle where it, like, it calls him out. He's literally calling himself out on it, but we haven't seen any of that in the film yet.
Well, wait a minute. No, we had. There's that scene where he's calling her from the truck stop, and she's like, "I really miss you." And then this trucker kind of gives him the look.
Yeah.
And
goes, oh,
and
I see.
Follows that guy in there.
All right.
Yeah, and I mean,
follow the guy in there, or he just kind of looks at him?
Well, that's what they're insinuating.
Took it as he went, "Oh, I'm going to see what's in there."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to explore this. You've piqued my interest. Yeah. You know?
Trucker with the tight jeans. I'm gonna go.
But we've all known people like that when they're like, mm-hmm. "I got to sit you down and I got to tell you something. I'm gay." And you're like, "Yeah. Everybody knows, mm-hmm. right?"
Yeah.
I feel like that was the same way with this. Mm-hmm. Was when he finally, you know, said the words. Everybody was like, "Yeah, great, cool."
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
everyone kind of already knew.
Yeah,
especially
we've all moved on.
What was interesting about his girlfriend that was like, you know, they set up this whole, like, all right, this is going to be the talk. Like, we're going to have this conversation. What's wrong? What's bothering you? I think you know. I think you have a pretty good idea what's wrong and what's bothering him. He doesn't want to be in this relationship with someone of your gender. That's what's going on.
You know, he tried to say that he was bisexual, too. And I wonder if the real Freddie Mercury did hold to that for a while. If
right.
he was really trying
question.
Not
Aaron?
To...
Yes. Aaron, was he bisexual?
No, but he thought he was, and then it was just clearer and clearer that he was just into dudes.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. But he stayed with that girl. I mean, he was his best friend for life.
But
so.
And then think about, like,
because that
coming...
was real quick. I'm sorry, but that was true, though, that he, like, moved her when he became crazy famous and bought the big fancy place with the rooms for his cats, that he moved her.
She was the one that took care of him at the end of his life and all that sort of stuff. I mean, he left most of his estate to her.
Wow.
Yeah, he left the big mansion to her. He left, like, a ton of money to her, all that sort of stuff. Well, and Jim, the guy who became Freddie's partner for the last 7 years, 6 or 7 years of his life, that you see
that
sort
parasite.
Of at the end of...
Right.
No, the guy who was the parasite.
Oh, Jim Hutt.
The guy with the mustache that he kind of connects with at the end of the film, who that was his actual partner.
One of the catering staff, and then...
Which was completely fabricated. By the way.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. He was not on the catering staff. They met at a gay bar.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Now, why would you change that?
We talked about this in the regular episode. They made so many dumb changes. Like, that makes me dislike the movie more.
It just is convenient, right? It's convenient storytelling where I don't have to, like, build this other... I can do two things. I can show that he was a person who partied and didn't have any real friends, and a person that met this dude, Jim, and I could just combine those scenes in those locations, right?
We have one less location. We're going to save $50,000.
But he actually didn't leave a lot to Jim, and then after Freddie died and Mary took over the mansion that he had, she actually kicked Jim out. She was like, you can't live here.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That's nuts. All right, so let's get into Grant.
Because we never saw the end of that, end of his life, really. I mean, the movie ends at Live Aid.
Which, that's the thing. Okay.
And he hadn't actually even been diagnosed with AIDS yet.
At Live Aid.
In real life, by that time. He got diagnosed in 1987. Live Aid was in 1985.
And he tells the band during the Live Aid rehearsal in the movie.
So that's like a big... fabrication of the movie too.
Why would they do that? Why would they?
Because they ran out of film. There's not enough to show after
Bryan
Live Aid. That was
stopped
it.
Showing up.
He took the rest of the film with him.
Well, and it makes it more. I gotta tell you, man, that Live Aid scene went on way too long. But boy, did it make me cry in multiple moments. You know, and I don't. If he hadn't have just told his bandmates that he was diagnosed with AIDS, would it have had that emotional
impact?
It has impact?
An, theatrically,
probably not. Yeah, that's what I mean. Theatrically,
cinematically.
Yeah.
Let's ask you this, Grant. So in the regular episode, you know, Chris and I and Matt Weinhold the three of us didn't really like it. Aaron, at any point you want to weigh in? Aaron said
loved it.
You loved it.
Loved it. All right.
And you were crying at the end too, right, Aaron?
Yep.
Okay. So Grant, let me ask you this. How did you overall? So you were emotional during the end. What really connected with you? Because I at that point was kind of like, oh, I'm going to see their whole 20-minute set.
Yeah. No, I mean, exactly, it clearly went on way too long. That Live Aid stuff was like, oh, don't you have more? Like, This feels like you're putting this in place of storytelling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like
there's another 10 to 15 minutes of story that we're missing while we're on stage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thought that there were problems like that. And I would say my overall impression of the movie is I liked it, but I didn't love it. Because there are, you know, things like that where I'm like, well, this is a real problem. You know, I think one of the other problems about biopics where you know, I mean, I like Queen and I like Freddie Mercury, so the movie didn't really tell me anything I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And some biopics do that. Like, if you saw Ray, like, I liked Ray because there were things that I felt like I learned about Ray Charles that I didn't know already. And in this movie, there was nothing I learned. I knew Freddie Mercury.
That he was gay.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I mean, how did he keep that secret for so long?
Yeah. But, you know, I knew that he, had a girlfriend. I knew that he then, you know, stayed friends with her. I knew that he was diagnosed with AIDS. I knew that they were doing this rock opera sort of stuff that nobody had done before. I mean, there was nothing new. There were no new revelations in the film, which is, I think, a problem.
Well, that's a good point, because I said this in the regular episode, and this is, and I'm not excusing Bryan Singer or anything crazy, but just that a biopic filmmaker has to make this decision. I know Queen, I liked them, I wasn't a massive fan, but there was stuff that I did learn in this, because like I didn't know he was like Indian. And changed his name. And I mean, I assume Freddie Mercury, I'm assuming that wasn't his real name, but I didn't know that his name was, you know, Farouk Balsara, right?
Yeah.
And the stuff with his dad and his mom, and I didn't know that. That was interesting to me. The specifics of Bohemian Rhapsody and the historical context of it, I knew that song. Wow, that's cool. It's a big rock opera. I didn't realize that at the time that you know, there was an executive or whatever, somebody high up went, no, no way, it's got to be 3 minutes. 6 minutes is too long. And so that actually stuff was interesting for me.
That's actually the stuff I liked the most too, where it was that whole idea of this isn't going to get played on the radio.
Right.
Where I never knew that at all. But I do feel like, you know,
one thing I didn't know, speaking of that, the Bohemian Rhapsody, this is never going to play it on the radio. But then when they did force it to finally come out, that the reviews were terrible.
I didn't know.
I didn't remember that, you know. But I thought that was really interesting, because it's like a classic. And then when it got re-released, it got famous.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I wonder how many other songs that people might change their mind about if it was released again.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so that, in those things, I'm like, there's problems. But I can't say that I didn't like the movie, because I probably cried on four separate occasions in the, like, and how many movies do I see that have no power to move me at all?
Right.
Right. That don't make me feel anything. And I went with my buddy, Dave Waite, who, if you
He's been on the show.
Yeah. For anybody who doesn't know Dave Waite, Dave is a guy, if you try to express your emotions to him, he will literally call you a queef. and I looked over, and Dave cried in multiple periods during the film, and I never
when
see
he saw
him cry.
That you saw him cry, did he punch you in the face?
Yeah, I mean, he was like, oh man, I felt like a real bitch, and then I saw you crying and I felt better. But so I would say that that's like a good aspect of
the thing.
Film.
Yeah, if a movie moves you, then it did its job.
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wasn't really... I wanted to be... Maybe part of the reason why I wasn't that moved is there was these two, like, teenage girls sitting next to me. They came in late. They're on their phones.
The entire time.
So you're just mad the whole time.
And I was annoyed, and I finally went... After about 15 minutes of that, I kept sort of looking at them and the glare of their screens, and I finally just went, stop talking.
Yeah,
and they didn't make a noise. The sound.
Oh, nice.
And I had forgotten that they were there. After
and
that
then
point.
Maybe you're like, man, I should have done that earlier.
I should have done that the minute they sat down.
Yeah, yeah.
But so had I been sitting more alone, maybe I would have been more into it. But again, I've never disliked Queen, but I never was like, man. I just was like, oh. wow, cool. And I really like Rami Malek. I think he did a great job.
He was fantastic.
Well, yeah. and I was worried about that because in my estimation, Freddie Mercury is the greatest rock and roll singer of all time. Maybe not the greatest singer of all time.
Amen, brother.
Yeah. The greatest rock and roll singer. He had so much range. He had so much style. He had so much emotion in his voice and all that sort of stuff. And so I'm terrified of trying to do someone pull it off, right? Because you're never going to be Freddie Mercury. Mm-hmm. Freddie Mercury was amazing.
Yeah.
And I thought Rami Malek did such a great job.
Yeah, he did really well.
Like, he just owned it so much, and he had all of the... And, you know, he actually did some singing in it. You know, it's mostly... from recordings and that sort of stuff.
The weird thing, it was, when I read about this, it was actually a combination, which is very, very odd. Like, Canadian singer Mark Martel.
Yeah.
He
was in the official Queen tribute band until recently.
Oh, really?
So what they did is they used a mix of his voice and Freddie's together on top of Malik's.
Yeah.
So it interesting. Was, it, yeah. He said the singing was seamlessly mixed with both Freddie and Martel. So it's really... you know, I wonder if audio technology has increased to the point where they could do more things with it now than they could maybe 10 years ago. I don't know. But it sounded fantastic.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. The thing I liked, too, about Rami Malek's performance was the thing about performers. And, I mean, you see this, like, in the Lady Gaga documentary or whatever, someone of that massive...
And, by the way, took her name from that song, Radio Gaga.
Oh, that makes sense. I never knew that.
The thing that all performers have, we all can identify with this, is the bold confidence to go on stage and say, I'm going to take command of this room, and then just crippling self-doubt.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, just and he said, you know, I forget who he was talking to at what point in the movie, but Rami Malek says, you know, I need this, it's the between moments that are so hard to navigate. And it's like, God, I so identified with that
because
I literally just came off the road. I just did, you know, the Progressive Comedy Tour in Sacramento and San Francisco, just two nights, but they were awesome shows and everyone was there to see us and it was so cool. And then I come home and I've had that where then I'm home, I'm not performing, I'm just home alone one night, and I'm just like, I'm sitting there going, I'm doing nothing, my life is empty, and it's just like, Jesus.
You get why, I mean, I get why so many performers are alcoholics or drug addicts, right? Because you go from being the center of attention, everybody loves you, everybody's telling you how amazing you are, to they all go home with their husbands and their wives and their children and stuff like that, and then you go sit in a hotel room by yourself 15 minutes later after you were just on top of the world.
Yeah.
You know? And it...
And they go, like, and then in the car ride home, they're like talking, and you're so great, and that joke, and you're just so alone. Cool after the show, and then you're in a hotel room flipping through cable going, ugh.
Yeah.
I've seen this already.
This is why I canceled my cable 4 years ago.
Yeah, for sure.
And it is a thing. And I would imagine that the bigger you go, the more dark and quiet it gets.
When you're performing in front of 50,000 people.
Yeah.
I mean, chanting your song.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you go from Live Aid?
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, that was, you know, it's one of the biggest concerts ever. Actually, that was the biggest concert ever.
Yeah, it was. You know, one of the things I wish the movie had done, too, is that, you know, one of the things I know just from, like, music history or whatever is that their performance really stood out in Live Aid.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you got no sense of that. You got the sense of them doing a good performance.
A great set,
But there was no sense of, like... You know, they don't even include Led Zeppelin's performance when they release the like video of it anymore. Led Zeppelin doesn't want it.
Well, this movie should have
really.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the movie should have taken an additional 20 minutes and shown some of the other bands.
Well,
so
here's what I wish they would have done instead. First, when they start with him walking on stage for Live Aid at the very top of the movie, I go, all right, so are you going to end with Live Aid?
It was pretty clear where the movie was going.
And I really, that always kind of bothers me because I get that it was a clear choice, and I'm not saying I 100% disagree with this choice of saying, well, everybody knows or most people know about his being diagnosed with HIV and dying from AIDS and, you know, that era in the 80s where a lot of big name people that was happening to, and there was AIDS fears and all this stuff. So we just want to focus on his career or whatever. And I was just like, especially learning now that he hadn't been diagnosed till 2 years after Live Aid, and they fabricated this whole band breaking up thing when the reality was in 83 they were just burnt out. They just said, let's just take a break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They didn't break up, and it was like, you know, so his solo career didn't go well, and I need you and all this. So it was sort of just like it just fell into cliche bio rock pick film of like,
it's a trap. A lot of them kind of fall into.
They fall into this, man, and it's just like you could have done so many interesting things. And I said this in the regular episode. When it comes out that he's gay and MTV pulls him, it's just one scene. I think they should have focused more on that because show me a three-act structure. Show me the kid that's a baggage handler that decides to join this band and kind of forces them to take, you know what I mean? And then their rise. And then the third act should have been him, you know, in the 80s, massive star, Live Aid, and then being diagnosed and how, and you kind of missed an opportunity to show audiences, especially a younger audience. You know, if you're younger, you didn't grow up. Maybe you didn't hear a lot of that AIDS paranoia.
No, uh-uh.
the rampant homophobia that came as a result of that, and
I wondered if that was somewhat the choice because Freddie Mercury himself really didn't want to be a poster child for AIDS. You know, I mean, he didn't announce publicly. He got diagnosed in 87 and told his bandmates, but he didn't announce publicly that he had AIDS until the day before he died.
Right.
And so I wondered if that was like trying to honor him in some sense of like, we don't want to make this all about his struggle with AIDS because that's not what he wanted in life.
And
you know
what? If that's the reason, that's a valid reason.
Because
there is that scene, and it's a great scene in the film where he goes, I'm not going to be their poster boy.
Yeah, right.
I mean, cautionary tale.
Oh, man, that made me cry.
Yeah, I was like, oh, bold, good for him. So if that was the filmmaker's choice, okay, great. Because you
wonder, too, like, was he approached to do PSAs? Like, was that something where, you know, this is a big celebrity with this virus, you could do some good if we put him in some PSAs. And it was, you wonder if he was approached to do
that. Yeah.
If that did happen, I think that would be more interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Obviously, you have to show Live Aid.
Yeah, yeah.
But making that the last 20 minutes of a movie that's probably 30 minutes too long?
Yeah, not a great choice.
Well, and mm-hmm. okay, let me ask you that, because I felt like this was a problem with this movie, but is it a problem with just this movie, or is it a problem with biopics in general? Is that it does sometimes feel like just sort of a slow march to an inevitable ending, right? Like where we kind of know what's going to happen, so nothing's that interesting. It's just kind of like, okay, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. And I felt like that's what this movie was, some. And is that a problem with this movie specifically, or is that a problem with biopics where you kind of know the ending already?
I think it might be a little of both, actually, where it's a, you know, it's a problem with the structure of biopics, but no one's really figured out a way or is taking any risks on doing something different with the formula.
Yeah,
and I'd like to see some different, you know, take some risks with the formula, which I'm wondering, I don't know if they showed the Elton John trailer before.
Mm-mm,
no,
they didn't.
So before Bohemian Rhapsody, they showed the Elton John trailer. That looks like they're going to really mess. They're going to really play with or try some different, go outside the biopic standard framework.
Well, you also have the big difference of your subject being alive or passed away.
Sure.
Too.
Mm-hmm. So, but I want to go back to saying this, though, in terms of the question about is this a problem of biopics? In some cases, I think some filmmakers just go, well, yeah, we're going to do a dramatized version. It's not a documentary. This is, and for me, I always kind of accept that caveat a little bit because this is what happened. So I always get mad when they change stuff because I'm like, don't do that with the truth, with the reality of what happened. This person had such an interesting life. You don't need to add crap to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or take stuff away or whatever. And I think, to me, like, Walk the Line is a is another biopic that I really... I like Ray and I like Walk the Line.
Yeah.
And I think Walk the Line did a good job of showing the... To me, what it should be is the behind the scenes that we didn't get to see.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And I thought Ray did a good job because I didn't know how much Ray struggled with drug addiction.
Right.
You know? And that movie really delved into that.
Or, you know, his stance on racism and, you know...
Yes.
What happened in the state of Georgia.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
He was banned from that state until the late 90s or 2000s.
For sure. I wasn't aware of a lot of that. A lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I feel like. And I did not feel like Bohemian Rhapsody really did a deep dive into stuff we didn't know.
Right.
About the mm-hmm. band or Freddie Mercury. Mm-hmm. So
that's a good point. I want to... So...
Yep.
Aaron, give us your full take on this film.
As a fan,
I thought they did as good a job as I think you can. With the band as hands-on as they were.
That's a good point.
You know, and not getting too salacious, not getting too... I mean, there's already... I don't know if Grant has seen these as well, but there's already like two really great documentaries about the band. I have them both on Blu-ray. I mean, you know, I'm a huge fan. So yeah. Like,
what
I
are
already
the names
had,
of those docs, Aaron?
One was called Those Were the Days. And the other is The Great Pretender.
Okay.
Freddie Mercury. So yeah, you can check those out if you want the absolute facts. I mean, I think one of them is like, I think Those Are the Days is like almost 3 hours long.
Oh, wow.
So you can get in there. And I've read a giant, massive book. So I know a lot. And the fact that it could still do what it did, change things up, and then still get me in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And to see Rami Malek really, really do all the moves from Live Aid and everything. I mean,
mm-hmm. I mean, there were times you forgot.
Yeah.
It wasn't
100%.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is impressive. That's mm-hmm. what carries the film for me, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
So then, Aaron, I mean, I know we asked you in the regular episode, but go into a little more detail. Since there's, you know, all of this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and they took several fairly sizable liberties with it.
Yeah.
How were you able to not let that piss you off and take you out of the film?
I don't know. I just kind of, I'm at peace with that. I don't know. It just, to me, it told a dramatic story dramatically. And like, I don't know if it would have had the same like punching impact if it had gone, if we just watched him melt away in reality, you know, it might have just ended way sadder, you know, because that's how it really kind of went.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause they do end on the image of them at Live Aid, and then they show a photo of him, of them actually at Live Aid, and you see the photo of him on stage, the whole band on stage in this massive 100,000 person stadium, mm-hmm. going, holy shit.
Well, and in some sense, like what Aaron was just saying, the movie ended on a positive note rather than a negative note, right? I mean, maybe that's one of the creative choices, was saying, you know, we're going to end with this guy being an amazing performer, even in the face of this terrible diagnosis, whereas
that he knows is a death sentence.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah. At that time, it was rather than this sort of slow melt away. That, you know, I mean, if you ever saw pictures of Freddie in his last public appearance, which was what, like 3 weeks before he died, or something like that. I mean, it's like hard. It's hard to look at. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think. And again, like going back to Ray, where at the end of Ray, they give the statistics on some of it, and also how then they show actual Ray Charles being welcomed back to the state of Georgia because he was banned from the state of Georgia when he took.
And now his song is the official state song.
Yeah. So I kind of wish.
And all the movies are being made there now.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of wish we would have got some more kind of. If you're going to end on Live Aid, then tell me how much Live Aid raised, how much came in during those guys' set. Like, you know what I mean? Like, give me some of that.
Yeah.
I would have liked a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But it was,
It's so funny listening, Aaron, to your, you just said, I'm good with it, because you just got to see a dramatization of your favorite band.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. And everyone pokes all these holes in the Dark Knight.
Very much in their personality, too. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing enough about Brian and how they all operate with each other and how they were just like, yeah, you're gay. It's fine. Like,
yeah.
And then he's like, it happened the way they show it in the movie. Like, I know I have this death sentence. I want to make as much music as possible. And they put out like 5 albums.
You know,
released the last one posthumously, like with everything he had left.
Yeah.
You know, it's
well, and do you guys know why, like, Brian May and some of the other band members weren't that happy with the film? Like, what was their gripe with it?
I think they're happy with this version. I think they are. They weren't with
Sacha Baron Cohen version.
Got it.
That never got made.
Because I was, upon leaving the film, I was like, man, I think this film really puts all the band members in a pretty good light.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it mm-hmm. shows that they were all part of the creative process, that mm-hmm. It wasn't just Freddie Mercury and 3 random guys.
Well,
right?
They made a specific point at the press conference. It's like, well, you're the leader of the band. No, I'm the lead singer of the band. I'm not the leader of the band.
Yeah. So.
I think that's because the information we got was Brian May didn't like the fact that the Sacha Baron Cohen version was all about Freddie Mercury and not the band.
Got it.
And they were like, no, this isn't how we operated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
I mean, to be fair, most people are interested in Freddie Mercury when it comes to Queen.
Sure.
You know, I mean, Brian May is an amazing guitar player and has been listed on every, publication's top, 20 guitarists of all time. But I don't think if you walked down the street and casually said Brian May, if anybody would really know what you're talking about, right?
They wouldn't. They would know Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, exactly. So that's going to be most of the public's in, so I understand why you would want to focus it on Freddie Mercury. Mm-hmm.
But I think this. Yeah. I'm glad they did this version, seeing the interaction with the band.
Yeah, it was. How could you not have that part of the story? I mean, that's something I thought the film got really right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's this scene where Freddie Mercury's late again, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's a habitual thing. And that's when Brian is like, I want to do this. I want to let the audience. And he starts the... Boom, boom. And he starts that. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
What a cool... He's like... Because he was like, remember the last show? They were singing our songs.
Totally.
And we were like blown away by it. Let's get him more involved. And it was like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's cool.
They were the ones to really start doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely took a lot of risks, like, creatively, which is, I think the movie does a good job showing that, mm-hmm. Because, I mean, even now, you listen to Bohemian Rhapsody and you're like, this song should not be as good as it is, right? It's all over the place. Mm-hmm. It doesn't know what it is. It's
nonsense,
like,
words.
That's what I mean. Like, I don't know how this worked, and I love that song, mm-hmm. right? And that song is one that... Anytime comes on karaoke, everybody in the place lights up.
Everybody.
You know what I mean?
What does Scaramouche mean? Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's fun to sing it while you're drunk.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I feel like everybody's at. And so it's cool. I think that movie does a good job of showing how much creative risks they took.
Let me ask this question. Do you think it will... and or deserves any Oscar nominations, and which ones?
I think the only one it deserves and will get is Best Actor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean...
I would argue, sound editing, sound mixing.
I could see with sound. I could see with that sort of stuff.
I don't think it's going to get it. No, Jesus. I think that and the reason is not because it has good sound editing or sound mixing, but those nominations are generally reserved for those type of movies.
But considering the 3 singing voices that they edited together, it would warrant it. It would be the should.
Yeah,
should
yeah.
Should in our category?
Not will, but it should. Yeah.
But it will get nominated for a Golden Globe for Best
Comedy.
musical/comedy. Because always struggle to find those.
For sure. It'll end up at the Golden Globes.
I think Rami Malek should deserve it. I'd like to see the sound
sound mix. I'd like to see sound mix edit. And I agree. I think you're right, Grant. I think it is going to get that crazy Golden Globe. The Golden Globe's like, yeah. It's always like, wait, you thought that was a comedy or whatever?
And you technically, it's not really a musical either.
Yeah, yeah. So. What about costuming? Could it get anything for that?
It could.
I don't think it'll get it's something a period for costuming piece. Either. Yeah, but there's going to be stuff that's going to overshadow it. It'll be some Merchant Ivory type movie that'll come out. It'll have some giant gown in a ballroom. That'll be
If there's an Elizabethan movie on vote
Winner.
For it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's going to the Nutcracker.
Right. Yeah. That's about all that went to the Nutcracker over the weekend.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
Yeah. I just want to correct myself. The documentary is called These Are the Days of Our Lives, like the song.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
And then also, interestingly, you mentioned the Elton John biopic. That is directed by Dexter Fletcher, who took over the last 2 weeks.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So,
well, now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Elton John biopic looks... There's some cool stuff where, like, he does a song and then the audience... where he does Rocket Man. I think that's the name of the movie.
Yeah. Mm.
Then the audience starts raising up when he's singing it. Like, it's sort of a surreal...
Oh, cool.
Like,
I wonder if he'll get fired and then Bryan Singer will have to finish it.
You'd have to be quite an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Will they cover his mysterious hair regrowth? That's what I want to know.
That's why I'm going.
That's the thing I need to find out. All right. Well, yeah. Cool. Bohemian Rhapsody, man. Spoiler up 87.
All right. Wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
Put it in the books.
Bag it down.
Bag it down.
Work it.
Yeah. Throw it in a sack.
So, Grant, where can people find you on the World Wide Web?
Oh, I'm on all the social media as GrantLyon1, the number one, because some other jerk took my name first. No. Yeah. And my website is just GrantLyon.com. Cool. So pretty easy.
Check out Killer Kate.
Yeah, guys. Thanks.
Yes, absolutely. And that's on Amazon Prime?
Yeah, it is on Amazon Prime. Yeah.
And you guys, you know, tell us what you think of Bohemian Rhapsody. Since there's four people here with kind of varying views of this movie, let us know what you think. Go to the message boards and let us know. Charlene, start a Bohemian Rhapsody, yay or nay, message thread. And let us know what you think.
Absolutely. Start warming up those boards. Break them in.
Get those boards hot. All right, that's our episode, guys. Go to the store. Any shirt order you buy, you get a free T-shirt.
Yes.
Support the Patreon. Like and share the audio all over the place. All that free stuff you can do to help the channel.
Yep, it's all appreciated for sure. Thanks so much.
My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.